Paceline is a production of the Cycling Independent with generous support from our subscribers and with additional underwriting from Shimano North America. From the Cycling Independent, this is The Paceline, the podcast on two wheels. I'm Patrick Brady, and with me is my co-host, John Amlin Robot Lewis. Each week, we take a look at how cycling fits in our lives. I'm guessing that you're still following the Spring Classics closely?
Oh, yes. Yes. It's been an interesting little time. Amstel Gold was this last weekend. The men's race was somewhat interesting. Four riders made it to the line together. Tom Pidcock won that, which surprised me. But I like Tom Pidcock. I like the way he rides. So that was nice. On the women's side, it was nuts. There was a group sprint. There was a group sprint. The fastest woman in the world, Lorena Vibes, appeared to be winning, so much so that she threw her victory salute.
Yeah.
Only to have Marianne Vos throw at the line and beat her by, I don't know, 10 centimeters?
Enough.
Yeah. And you love to see it. But also, like, if you're a pro who has won dozens and dozens of races, I don't know, ride all the way to the line.
I think part of the problem is when you're a pro who's won dozens and dozens of races, you think you know when you have it all sewn up.
Yeah.
That finish line shot of the throw is magnificent.
It is a bike throw. It is, I don't know that you can throw a bike further than she threw it.
You'd be coming off the bike at that point.
Yeah. Well, the other thing that was interesting about it, and this is a mitigating factor, is that to be where she was, Vibes had snuck up along the barriers. Like, she made it through a hole that she wasn't sure was going to exist. She did not expect Vos to come through that very same hole right behind her, because who would have thought that was possible? But when you're Marianne Vos, you've done so many things so many times that, like, I think she might be the only rider there who could have made that happen. And it was magnificent.
Yeah.
Today is Wednesday, the 17th. So Flesh Wallonie was this morning. I haven't watched all of it yet. But what I do know is that the weather went haywire. So they had rain, wind, sleet, and even some snow.
I got to make sure to watch that. I mean,
Yeah.
So bike racing in inclement conditions. That's what I love. I don't want 75 and sunny. Can I go inside now?
Oh, yes. It was a very can I go inside now day. Stevie Williams won the men's race for Israel Premier Tech. I don't know that I've seen them win a race before, so that was neat. And then on the women's side, I'll be honest, I'm finding the women's racing so much more interesting.
Good.
And I'm like, that's sure to shift, right? Like, that's going to change, but it doesn't change week to week. So this week, I think I mentioned last week that I thought SD Works would completely dominate everything this year, and they have done pretty well. But you have these riders, like previously it was Elisa Longo Borghini, winning races again that I didn't expect her to win, although she's always there or thereabouts. And another one of those riders, Kasia Nuwadoma, the Polish rider, won at Flesh Wallonie today, and she beat Demi Vollering from SD Works and Longo Borghini. from Little Trek. And I just think it's super fun. Like last year we watched SDWorks, you know, kind of sweep the board. Animek Van Vleuten won some of the bigger races, the stage races, but SDWorks really just took everything left, right, and center. And so to see Mariana Voss getting wins in front of SDWorks and then Kashinu Vadoma stealing one from Demi Vollering is pretty exciting. I mean, it, unlike the men's side, most of the time on the men's side, you're like, oh yeah, we know who's going to win this.
Right. Yeah.
Or at least we know who are the top three. Whereas on the women's side, it's like, what's going to happen? I don't know.
That's awesome. Yeah. Very cool. I'm only going to mention this and then we're going to keep moving. But have you seen that Van Moof is back?
Oh, yes.
They are selling bikes.
Yeah. I mean, I think the last thing I wrote about them was that they were dead. So now they're zombies. It's another one of these zombie bike companies. And I went, you know, I wish whoever is trying, I always wish them well. I'm not rude. I had a terrible, terrible experience with Van Moof, but that doesn't mean I don't want them to figure it out and get it together.
Right. I just wonder how hopeful we should be.
Oh, not at all.
Well, there you have it. Okay.
Yeah.
What are you pulling about today?
So, yeah, let's get away from that. So, as you know, I've been doing a lot of trail running, which is not bike riding. Mm. And that's because I'm signed up for a race in a few weeks, and it's supposed to be a really hard race. And anyway, it's been so rainy here for the last month that the trails haven't been rideable up until, I don't know, maybe yesterday or today. Mm. So I've been running and biding my time. I'm upgrading my main mountain bike, I'm pretty excited about that. Mm. I'm also, so I've been cleaning and lubing the road and gravel bikes. Like I'm ready. The mountain bike isn't done yet, but it will be very shortly. I'm just about ready to shift gears fully. But anyway, I was out running this morning. This upcoming race is super technical. So it's got lots of vertical over very challenging terrain. And so that's what we've been working on in our training. And I'm realizing today how much my mountain biking mindset sort of permeates and informs how I run.
Huh.
And then I'm running along and then I'm kind of like, wait, is this just mountain biking without the bike? You know? So here are a few things I notice. First, riding has taught me the value of momentum.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of runners look for a pace and they stick to it, which if you can do it, it's a good skill to have, you know, that ability to run or ride at a steady effort.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But when you're running technical terrain, getting everything you can out of a descent, even a brief one, has a big benefit on the climb that comes right after.
Uh-huh.
Even if it's a brief one, even if you're going like down 5 feet and up 5 feet, if you take a quick step into that descent, you get the following climb for free.
Mm-hmm.
More or less. And that ability to carry and maximize your momentum makes a big difference, especially if you're covering a long distance.
Mm-hmm.
Second, line reading is sort of the same. So on foot, I'm often diving into a rock garden or other technical stretch because I believe in my heart that I have the agility to solve the problems as they come.
Okay.
And that's a lot like what I do on a bike, though there's this process of scanning the trail to find the easiest or fastest line. You know, when you go into a rock garden, say, sight unseen, you've never been on this trail before. It's not like you pull up and stop and then pick the line, right?
Hopefully.
I mean, there's nothing wrong with doing that, but generally I want to take a run at it.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
So I'm going to choose the best line I can see at the time. And so doing that over a period of years really helps, you know, on foot, because, okay, the lines are different, but they're also kind of the same.
Yeah.
Third, recovery is key. So going back to point one about momentum, the benefit isn't just in expending less effort to achieve the same work, but in giving yourself a better ability to recover after a technical effort.
Yeah.
You know, if you can get your heart rate back under control quickly, then you're set up for success with whatever comes next. I happen to love super challenging single track. You know, the sort of single track where you stop every, I don't know, 7 or 8 minutes, and you're basically heaving over your handlebars because you've been working so hard.
I know what you're talking about.
Just punch after punch after punch, and you're muscling the bike, and you're, you know, it's like this whole body exercise. So this like really punchy training we've been doing running has been good for that recovery. It comes quickly. And then the fourth thing I noticed is that scouting never stops. Okay, I've been running, and mostly I've been running in places where I also ride. Running gives me another opportunity to look at rocks and alternate lines that I'd like to ride later. I do this little joke with my running partner where I will jump over a rock or off of a rock that I don't need to, and then I yell parkour.
I make motorcycle sounds.
Yeah. It's that kind of thing. But all those rocks, I'm kind of like, no, I could ride this. I could ride that. If I go over here, there's a little jump there. So I'm running, but I'm also sort of running it like I would ride it. And next month, that's going to be super fun. So I've really enjoyed this training, and I know... this is a cycling podcast, and it might feel forced to talk about running in the context of riding, but I'll also just say that I'd really recommend, everyone's going to cringe, I'd really recommend one day a week of running to anyone who wants to be a better rider, or is just interested in retaining some bone density as they get older, you know? I love bikes. I love them all day long, but a little bit of impact training will keep you on your bike longer than not. And I often think that, though, you know, I always consider myself a bike rider first. Things like trail running or skiing, for that matter, are basically just the same thing as bike riding. I mean, strictly speaking, not, but also, yeah, they kind of are.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think we can make a case for it's a good idea for our listeners to find other modes of movement to do from time to time, not just cycling as I did for many, many years.
Absolutely.
I'm paying for that now.
Yeah. You might have a stenosis in around your neck region.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe just a little bit. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, I could ride a mountain bike every day of my life, but I want to be riding a mountain bike many of the days of my life when I'm 80. And so I'm trying to do this other stuff now. It's also pretty fun.
Yeah. 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 You know, one thing I would add when you were talking about, you know, going into sections and not pausing at the top, one of the things that's come out in flow research is that, you know, like in skiing, a lot of times people will get to the top of a run and they'll stop and they'll, you know, look around and decide just how it is they want to drop in and what the first couple turns are they take.
Yeah.
Not the way to go. Flow research says when you get to whatever it is you're going to drop into, just drop in. Don't stop. Don't look around. Don't pass go. Don't collect $200. Just go.
Yeah. I buy that. I understand why people do it. I sometimes do it on skis because I'm less confident on skis than I am on a mountain bike.
Sure.
I get why it makes sense to do it. I think for me, a big step forward, I used to really want to ride everything clean the first time, if possible. And I just don't care about that anymore. So now I'm usually willing to take a flyer at something. I don't even mind falling off the bike. You know, Johnny Raz wrote a piece the other day about riding no hands and like how it freaked his parents out. And I was thinking, like, when I ride with my friends, I'm probably not the best rider there, you know, but I am the one. When you come to something that looks sketchy, I'm the one that's like, all right, I'll give it a shot.
Every group needs one of you.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, you know, I guess if I failed more than I succeeded, I would probably change my behavior. But what I learn is that usually if I throw myself into it, it usually goes better than I think it will.
That's a hell of a thing. That's a good reason to keep going.
I think so. I mean, I don't understand all of the psychology of it. There's a certain degree of like, I know that I'm going to crash. I know that I'm going to fall off. I know that things are going to happen. And I kind of pre-accept that. I'm a pretty graceful crasher. Like, if I know I'm trying something that no one else wants to try, I'm not going at it like Evil Knievel off the Snake Canyon, you know, trying to launch over the Snake Canyon. That's not... Right. I'm going at it... I'm bringing as much skill as I can to the party, and part of that skill is understanding how to run out of a problem without destroying yourself. It doesn't mean I never destroy myself, but... mostly I think I have some limited, but critical control of failure in those situations. So I'm usually willing to try things that other people are like, no, that's just not, I'm not going to succeed. But part of it is like courting failure. And part of it is like, you know, accepting defeat in advance.
Okay. Well, I mean, you know, you're open-minded, you're open to new experiences, you're willing to fail. Those are all the ingredients of eventual success.
I think they are. And I think the big thing that changed for me, just in terms of dealing with the fear of moving forward with this stuff, was realizing, like, I'm 52. I don't want to be falling off when I have to get all the gains I can get now.
That's a fair observation. Yeah. That's not a bad way to look at it.
So if I'm going to get better at bikes, which requires risk, I need to take those risks as soon as possible within reason. Again, I'm not reckless.
Right. Right.
But I feel an urgency around this stuff. And running is sort of that. This race we're going to do is stupid. I don't know why we're doing it, but it's one of those like, oh, that sounds stupid. Okay. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. I have a similar taste in events.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ooh, that sounds like it'll hurt.
Well, sometimes the question is, I wonder what I'll be like at hour number 6.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I answered a lot of those questions for myself on the bike. And then during the pandemic, I answered them on foot. So now we're doing this stupid event, but I don't think it's going to be harder than the 50K... Excuse me, the 50K race we did in Georgia in the heat. I don't think it's going to be worse than that. So, you know, I guess we'll go see.
We all await news of your success.
Oh, yeah. And then then I can really get back to talking about bikes all the time. People are going to be so sick of hearing about bikes on this podcast.
Right. Maybe this is where we take a break and come back in a minute. The Pace Line is sponsored by Shimano North America and their new 12-speed GRX mechanical group sets. Gravel cycling shouldn't be overly complicated. The heart and soul of cycling's drop bar dirt road discipline is simplicity, inclusivity, and adventure. No ride is out of bounds. All are welcome to join. Gear should be functional, reliable, and not break the bank. These are the core ideas behind Shimano's 12-speed GRX mechanical groups. Find out more at gravel.shimano.com.
Okay, we're back with the Pace Line, the podcast on two wheels. What are you yapping about today?
Speaking of crashing.
Oh, yes.
So I've shared previously about my tribulations with getting my eldest son, Philip, who longtime listeners may recall me referring to as Mini Shred, out on his bike. You know, when he was when he was 2, 3, 4, 5, he loved his bike. And then something happened, probably dad. We have been gently turning a corner with him finding more and more enjoyment on his mountain bike and beginning to find community with some of the other kids on the A team.
Yeah.
Well, Saturday it rained. And my promise to him is that I won't make him get on the bike if it's raining.
Yeah.
It takes a while to develop a love for cycling in the rain.
Yeah.
If you even develop it, you know, right? So in the afternoon, we walked over to our local bike shop, Breakaway Bikes, and Breakaway gave every kid, they're sponsoring the A-Team, and they gave every single kid on the A-Team a $100 gift card. And they were clear. This was for the kids to use. Parents, like me, could not co-opt it for repairs or other parts.
Right.
Some of the kids got gold SRAM chains and then wore them as jewelry. Matt, one of the partners there, was like, he just kind of threw his arms. Well, that's what they want to do. Okay. They were really chill. But plenty did like Philip, which is to say they chose a few items that they wanted to make their riding more enjoyable. Philip picked a new set of grips, his first set of lock-ons, some Giro gloves, and a pair of, are you ready for this, John?
I am.
Some Chester pedals.
Oh, yeah. Beaten dead to the punch.
When we were shopping, it was clear that the Chesters were the most affordable pedals with replaceable pens.
Yep.
So, yeah, side by side, they did the stacking of the up.
Yep.
Afterward, I told Philip that if he wanted, he could have his mom bring him back over on Sunday and we would install the parts along with a dropper post that I had from a previous bike.
Upgrades.
Right. So the next morning, my ex texts me and tells me he wants to come over and go for a ride. Not that he wanted to install the parts, but he wanted to go for a ride.
Right.
My response? When does he want to ride? He can pick the time.
Right.
When he arrived, I helped him remove the old grips and pedals, and then helped him install the new grips and pedals. And with the dropper post, honestly, I did most of the work, but it was handy to have him help me.
Sure.
When we got out for the ride a short time later, I let him pick the course as well. And seriously, to my amazement, he wanted to open up with a hill that he had previously hated. It was the spot that I took him to when I was trying to teach him to downshift into his lowest gear for climbing rather than standing up and thrashing himself into oblivion. When we got to the opening of the top of that opening steep pitch, I turn around and he's right there, like 6 feet behind me. I was floored. What I didn't know was that, well, I found out 100 feet later, he was completely anaerobic and blew hard. He needed some time to recover. But what I loved about the experience was that he took the humbling perfectly in stride. Yeah.
I think there's, I think it's a big deal when someone who is maybe ambivalent about bikes comes to a point where they choose a climb.
Yeah.
They choose it.
Yeah. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly right. So a little while later, we got to a spot in the park where we would either need to turn left to head for one climb or bear right and take a different climb. Again, I gave the choice to him. He picked right. So there's a spot in Annandale State Park where one of the trails forks. On the right is Canyon, a big fire road. And on the left is Spring Creek, which is a shaded trail, usually wider than single track. And it starts reasonably and then gets both steep and rocky. I nursed Philip through the tough bits and kept encouraging him not to kill himself, but to back off wherever possible so that he would have something still in the tank for the harder bits.
Right.
This is going to be a while of learning, right? He didn't get it that day and he's not going to get it on the next ride, but he'll learn it if he keeps at it, right?
Yeah, that's super interesting. Oh, we have a way of talking about those things. I call like that backed off state, right? Where you're like, I'm not sure how much I have, but so I'm just going to measure this out. I call that riding in the pocket.
Okay.
So, so if we versus attacking, so if we're coming to a steep climb, I'll say, I'm going to sit in the pocket. Or I'll say, I'm going to attack. Right. An attack doesn't mean I'm trying to drop you. It means I'm going to try to overwhelm the climb with effort.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sometimes you put all that energy in and it sort of like erases the incline. Other times you have to, sit in your pocket. Anyway, go on.
So when we got to the top, I asked what next. And I'm expecting now that we're at the top of this climb that he's going to want to take one of the flatter trails nearby and do a loop around the lake or something. He said he wanted to turn around and descend Spring Creek right away. So we did. I was like, yeah, sure. You want it? Okay. That's what you want. We will do that. Like I said, the upper portion of Spring Creek can be pretty steep and it's rocky. Also the left side of the trail falls away to Spring Creek.
Right.
It's maybe 20 feet down, depending on just where you are along the way. Some places a little less, some places a little more.
This feels okay.
I'm just going to keep going. Yeah.
Yeah, do it.
Here's where I insert the bad dad moment.
Good.
I failed to notice that he hadn't put his seat down with the fancy new dropper post. He doesn't put the seat down in other contexts as well, which I've tried to talk to him about as well.
Right.
He hit a big rock with his rear wheel and his saddle bumped his butt and suddenly he's 45 degrees to the trail and headed for the creek. He came off his bike and fell between two trees that were maybe 18 inches apart and each of them were 10-ish inches in diameter. Philip was holding on to the two trees with his hands and his feet were higher than his head. He was essentially folded in half like a sheet of paper. It was, I'm going to go with not fun looking.
Yep.
Yeah. I picked his bike up and got it out of the way. Some very nice hikers stopped and one helped me help him up. Philip was honestly a little shaken up. He had some scrapes and it hit the chin guard of his helmet on one of the trees. And there was poison oak oil to wash off his amply exposed skin. Well, when we got home, he had a headache. So we went to the ER to get him checked out. After a few x-rays, they sent us home with a splint on his wrist for a sprain. one important thing I did for him here was I validated his pain and that he had a right to be frightened. And then I showed him that I cared, and that taking care of him after a fall was, you know, a real priority. He's still excited about writing, which is no small miracle.
Oh, he's jumped into the gang now.
You know, getting to this point has been an interesting combination of both a firm hand and a gentle touch. The firm hand has been about getting him out the door. I've had to be as firm with him about this as I've ever been about anything. Homework is the only other thing where I've come down on him as hard. Honestly, it's not easy for me to be that firm with him.
Yeah.
The gentle touch has been about watching his excitement and doing all I can to honor and foster it. If he's having fun, I do what I can to continue on that path or trail, as the case may
be. Right.
The other piece of this is affirming him, his fitness, his hard work, noting when I see him having fun and validating that. I'll take anything that gets him excited about cycling, up to and including gift cards. I mean, honestly, anytime extrinsic motivation works, I'll take it. But what I'm aiming for is intrinsic motivation. And I know from my own experience, that's going to take time to develop. I'm playing the long game here. I can see it coming, but this train is still years from pulling into the station.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think a crash like that, it's sort of like, it's got that sort of red badge of courage vibe to it, you know, where he might be more psyched about it because
he's been in the trenches.
He's been in the trenches and he came back out and, you know.
He is going to brag about that on Saturday.
Yeah, I mean, that's a story that he's going to tell and embroider for a long time, I think.
I hope. I want him to get as much mileage out of that thing as he can.
Definitely.
Because, taking a crash that doesn't completely rearrange your understanding of the sport is coolness personified.
Yeah. I'd be very interested to hear next time he chooses that descent. You know, like, is that a priority for him or is he gonna take some time to rebuild confidence? I mean, for all of what I was saying before about my confidence and whatever, when I do hurt myself, it takes time to get back in the right mindset, obviously.
For sure.
And I know what the rewards are, so, you know.
Right. Yeah. Well, you know, we're making progress and, you know, the things that I believed would work are working. It hasn't been easy. It hasn't been easy, but holy cow, I am just thrilled. Riding with him is, I honestly think it's a little cooler than even I thought it would be.
I rode with my son last summer. That's the last time we rode together and he's been away at school. So, you know, we don't have a lot of opportunity, but I rode with him once last summer. And it was not a long ride. It wasn't even a good ride in riding terms. But it was really great just to be out there with him and see him doing the thing, persevering when I didn't think he would. All sorts of little things like that. Just to have him say yes to an adventure was great. I mean, it's all great.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I can tell you as one with older kids that you will miss that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I mean, that's not a revelation, I guess, but there's a relief when you launch one of your kids, like you got them there, but then as much as you enjoy watching them have their life, it's also sort of a, oh, but could you come back and be my kid a little?
Yeah. I mean, every time I see photos of him from, you know, his, kind of, you know, toddler, 3-4 year old period. It's like, oh, he was such a cute, sweet kid.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm going to try to get that kid, my 19 year old son, out on bikes some this summer. So let's compare notes. Let's follow up on this.
Yeah, we will. Alrighty. Let's move on to Paceline Picks.
So this week I'm picking a book. It is Andy McGrath's God is Dead, The Rise and Fall of Frank Vandenbroek.
Mm.
Andy, as it turns out, is a friend of a friend. And so we're going to record a chat for this podcast maybe next week. I got to follow up with him. But I'll also write a proper review of the book for the website. But here's what I can tell you from halfway through.
Okay.
First, you know a book is well written when you basically know the plot in advance and still hang on every word. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah. Yeah.
Second, if you're interested in Belgian cycling culture, 90s pro cycling, the doping dynamic as it developed, like blossomed and took over, etc., then you will enjoy this book. I have this weird sort of nostalgia for that era, which was, it was really a screwed up time. And just as an explanation of where this book goes, I learned that Vandenbroek named his first daughter Cameron after Cameron Diaz.
Okay.
but his plan was, if they'd had a boy, that they were going to name it Lance. Because the two of them had been on Cofidis together briefly.
Uh-huh. Wow. Huh.
Yeah. Crazy times. And the other thing is that as Americans, during that period, we were definitely fed a very US-centric line during most of that period.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
And it's fascinating to get the other side, the Euro side. Now, if you read Laurent Fignon's biography, We Were Young and Carefree, you know what I mean. Like, as Americans, we were Le Monde guys.
Yeah.
And Fignon appeared to be this sort of aloof, snotty French, you know.
He was in 1989, he was the coolest villain on the planet.
Exactly. A total Bond villain.
Yeah.
But then you read his book and he becomes a human and you're like, oh, this is a sympathetic character.
Yeah. Yeah.
So in that vein, this book, I think, is pretty interesting. As I said, there's more to come. But anyone who missed its release, as I did, it's a fun read that might get you in the mood for pro racing just in time for the summer.
Neat. Alrighty. My pick this week is the helmet Philip was wearing when he crashed.
Oh, nice. Yep.
I was about to review it, and then we had what an insurance company might term a qualifying event.
Sure.
Philip was wearing the new Chase Kineticore helmet from Laser. So this is a full face helmet that weighs 990 grams and features 11 vents, giving it a level of ventilation that makes it suitable for enduro riders, not just downhillers. There's even kind of a grill at the front of the chin guard that, you know, will allow air to pass or get dust in your teeth. One.
Sure.
It comes in a whopping 5 sizes, so getting a good fit is pretty easy to do. Virginia Tech gave it 5 stars, and it's also ASTM certified, so it's safe. And I'm pleased to note Laser offers a crash replacement program, which is increasingly rare these days. Good things all, but what got me interested in this helmet was Laser's use of their new Kineticore technology. Kineticore is a method of shaping the EPS foam so that a lattice of channels runs through the first few millimeters of EPS. This is the best I can describe it without just showing you a photo. And there is a photo in the review on TCI. So it effectively creates room for the EPS to deform in the event of an impact. Yeah. Plastic deformation. In theory, it provides some of the same protection from rotational forces also that MIPS is designed to offer. Philip told me that breathing during a really hard effort was easier with this helmet than his previous full face helmet, a Bell Sanction, but that he'd prefer not to have a chin guard if it was all the same. I told him that the same it was not. And I don't think he really believed me until Sunday when he crashed.
Yeah.
Inside the chin guard, a very dense foam lines the sides, though it's open at that grill in the front. Mm-hmm. That foam, I think, took all of the impact, at least so far as I can tell. I've been inspecting the helmet. Put another way, there are a few scuffs on the polycarbonate shell. So while I can tell that the helmet made contact with something, I can't find any indication inside the helmet that there has been any impact at all. I am duly impressed. I'm supposed to mention that the Chase Kineticore goes for $199.99, but what I really want to mention is that given what high-end road helmets can go for, I am amazed by that price.
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Good stuff. The big thing, Philip, a believer in full face helmets for the time being.
And in having teeth.
I don't know if he's really done that piece of the math yet. He'll get there.
Maybe, or maybe he's got to lose a tooth to appreciate a tooth. So we'll just hope that he never gets there. How's that?
Okay. That also works. Alrighty. That's a wrap on another episode of the Paceline. We've mentioned a couple sites on the show today, a couple products, and there will be links to everything we've mentioned in our show notes on the Cycling Independent. And my review of the Laser Chase Kineticore helmet is already up and live.
As I am wont to say, our theme music is by Crash Cadet. Find them on Bandcamp or wherever you listen to music. Big thanks to the homies at Shimano for helping us pay the bills. If you also want to help us pay the bills, because you know there's a lot of them, you can subscribe to TCI or just drop a couple dollars in the tip jar in our online store.
Wherever you are, however your day is going, we do hope you get out for a ride. Until next time, I'm Patrick Brady with John Lewis. Thanks for listening to The Paceline.